السلام عليكم ورحمة الله وبركاته. الحمد لله الحمد لله وكفى والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا المصطفى صلى الله عليه وعلى آله وأصحابه وبارك وسلم تسليما كثيرا كثيرا. أما بعد، فقد قال الله تبارك وتعالى: أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم، بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها الذين آمنوا ادخلوا في السلم كافة ولا تتبعوا خطوات الشيطان إنه لكم عدو مبين. صدق الله العظيم. علماء الكرام، most respected brothers, Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala is the creator of man. He is the sustainer. He is the one who has created the entire universe. He is the one who has blessed us with our intelligence, with our hearing, with our sight, with our speech, with our heart, liver and lungs, and every other ni'mat that we can think of. It is a blessing of Allah Ta'ala. Outwardly it appears that we are making all the movement, but in reality it is Allah Ta'ala who is giving us the strength in our bodies to undertake those activities of life. For if He withdraws that strength from someone's body, then, or He gets the angel of death to extract the soul from the person's body, then that body is still there. The eyes are there, the ears are there, the tongue is there, the heart, liver and lung, everything is there, but that body cannot make any movement at all. Those eyes cannot see anymore, those ears cannot listen anymore, those tongues cannot wag anymore, those hands cannot touch anymore, and those feet cannot walk anymore. So that letter of Hazrat Imam Ghazali rahmatullah alayhi, which we have been discussing over the past few weeks, this is the message that he is getting across to us, that we should keep ourselves connected with our Allah and believe that everything is happening with the qudrat and the power and the will of Allah Ta'ala. And that Allah Ta'ala has got a system that you please Him and He pleases you. You fulfill your side of the contract and Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala will make sure that whatever promises He has made to man, Allah Ta'ala will fulfill it. And over the ages, this is what man has seen, that whenever a nation or a group of people or a society committed themselves to Islam, to Deen, to Sharia, then Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala also gave them victory, Allah Ta'ala gave them dignity, Allah gave them honor. Not only that, but wherever they went, with very little speech, Allah Ta'ala caused the hearts of people to turn towards them and they accepted Islam. Just a few business people go away to Indonesia and people accept Islam there in large numbers. So many other parts of the world, who was it that took Islam? A few business people that went, a few travelers that went, and they settled. And not only did they change the language of the people of their areas in Africa and in other places, but even they changed their whole culture, their whole lifestyle, everything, because of their practical lifestyles. At present, it is unfortunate that we just talk. Talk and speech is unlimited. But when it comes to practical actions, then we find ourselves very, very weak. Those people who are propagating, those people who are inviting towards the deen of Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala, those who are involved in all the structures that we have throughout the world of the propagation of Islam. But when it comes to practical actions, because of the weakness that is inherent, as a result, people are not attracted towards Islam. And if they are attracted, then after a few days, a few months, then they begin complaining that we thought that the Muslims were supposed to have these qualities, but we do not find it in them. So what I am saying is that Imam Ghazali rahmatullah alayhi, this is the message he is getting across to us in that letter which he writes to his student. We have discussed many parts of that letter, and now we are discussing that incident which Imam Ghazali rahmatullah alayhi mentions, of Hazrat Hatim Asam and Hazrat Shaqiq Balkhi rahmatullah alayhi, his ustad. When he was departing from him and separating from him, so then he asked him that what did you learn in your 33 years with me? He said, I learned only 8 things. Imam Shaqiq Balkhi Rahmatullah Alayh then asked him, what are those 8 lessons? Because 33 years, what did you really learn if you say you only learned 8 things? So we have been discussing the first one, where he says that when the person leaves this world, then nothing really accompanies him to the grave except his amal-e-salihah. If he has done good deeds, then those good deeds will help him not only in this world but in the qabr and in the akhirat. That is the thing that he will take along with him right up till Jannat. Something that a person should befriend in this world and give his heart to, amal-e-salihah, righteous deeds and righteous actions. And I've explained in detail for those who may not have been here that amal-e-salihah does not mean just the taking of tasbih and reading all the time subhanallah alhamdulillah. Amal-e-salihah does not mean that we have to have our forehead on the ground on the musalla whole day and night. Amal-e-salihah does not mean that we should be engaged all the time in zikr, tilawat, ibadat. What it really means is that whatever department of life you are in, whatever activity of life you are in, whether it is your business, whether it is your home, whether it is your travel, whether it is your marriages and walimas, whether it is the upbringing of your children, whatever you do, find out from the Quran Sharif and the Hadith Sharif that how it should be done. And we must never ever believe a person saying that it is not practical in our times. If a person says that the Quran Sharif cannot be practiced in our times, the Hadith Sharif cannot be practiced in our times, then it shows that that person has got no iman in Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala and His Qudrat and His power and His might and His wisdom and His unlimited knowledge. Because it means that we are saying that Allah Tabaraka wa Ta'ala did not know that in the 20th century there will be these type of problems, or in the 21st century there will be these type of problems, or in the 30th century there will be these type of problems, or this type of a revolution in science and in technology and in other fields. And as a result it will become impossible for a person to practice upon Islam. We must always look at where the weakness lies. The weakness is in us. We have created that kind of environment in our homes, which has now made it difficult for us to practice Islam in our own homes. Who has made the environment in the home? We are the ones who make the environment in our own homes, which make it difficult for us then to practice Islam. When we are going to show all those kind of films to our children, those dirty films, and when we are going to bring dirty literature and allow them to read, and when we are going to allow them to bring those friends into the homes who are on drugs and who have got other bad habits. So we are creating an environment, and where the parents are not going to be reading namaz, and when they themselves will be watching all the filth. So we have already created an environment of sin in our homes. Then afterwards we say that it is difficult to practice on Islam. So it's not difficult to practice on Islam, it is we who have created the difficulty for ourselves. So if a person is sick, then he must try and find a cure for that sickness and ailment, and do not blame the doctor. So this is why he says, amal-e-salihah is something which I made the beloved of my life. For I know that it is the only thing that will help me and assist me. And when I'm going to depart from this world, when my soul will leave my body, and when I'm going to be taken to the qabristan, and when I'm going to be buried, where there will be nobody else to accompany me into the grave, those who I loved so dearly, they too will put me into the grave and throw sand over me and part. They too are not going to come, no matter how dearly the wife loved her husband, and no matter how dearly the husband loved his wife, or anybody else that loved anyone else, they will come up to the graveyard, at the most they will make some dua and they will go away if they had love. But they will not come to sleep with a person in the grave.
یہ ایک قبر پہ بے کسی بزبان حال ہے کہہ رہی یہ ایک قبر پہ بے کسی بزبان حال ہے کہہ رہی تمہیں آنکھیں چاہیے غافلو مجھے احتیاج بیان نہیں.
You have heard this before too, that this is what the qabr is saying, the helplessness of the grave. بَزُبَانِ حَالَهِ كَهْ رَهِ, as if it is saying that you require sight, O you who are indifferent, negligent. It is you who require sight. I don't require any speech. I don't have to give you a speech. My silence is the biggest speech. So at that time he says, it is only this amal e saliha which will accompany the person. Therefore I made my the friend of my life righteous and pious deeds. Here I wish to bring to your attention that many a times you will find that a good desire comes up in the heart. This good desire is a guest from Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala. That the person suddenly gets a desire that I must give some charity, or I must make some namaz, or I must make tawbah and istighfar from my sins, that I have gone too far away from deen and from sharia, and it is time that I return to my Allah, and I return to the deen, and I return to Islam, and I return to the ahkam and orders of Allah Ta'ala. Now these thoughts come in the person's mind, or that I should read some Quran Sharif, or make 2 rakat nafil namaz. Now when the person ignores these thoughts, when he ignores these type of desires that are created in the heart, then sooner or later he is deprived of all the goodness. Because this was a guest that the person did not entertain. So Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala gives an opportunity to a person, every now and again the person is given this opportunity to repent and to turn towards him and come on track and start doing amal saliha. Now if we have to just discuss that first part of it, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا وَحَمِلُوا الصَّالِحَاتِ, we can take all the ayats and all the hadiths and we can go on and on and on, and it will not come to an end. But then we won't get on to the second point. So therefore let us go on to the second point today. Then he says that when I looked around, I saw that people, just for the sake of risk and sustenance, it is just for the sake of risk and sustenance, that they are unconcerned whether it is coming from a halal source or a haram source. Now he's telling his ustad, what did he learn in the 33 years? He says, I learned 8 lessons. The first lesson is that that everything leaves a person except his amal. So I made amal a saliha, my companion, my beloved. Now he says, the second thing that I noticed, that people are chasing after risk and sustenance. Something that Allah Ta'ala took upon himself, they become so restless in the chase after this risk and of sustenance, that they forget that Allah, who is the provider of that risk and sustenance. I'm explaining to you what he said to his ustad. He said that this is what I noticed. We are talking about general mankind. Mankind in general, or the community at large. We are not talking about exceptions to the rule. So he says, if you have to look around, and we don't have to go far, we have to look around in our society, we have to go around to the bazaars, go to the marketplaces, and see how people are restless, how they chase after this risk and sustenance, which is actually chasing after them. It is something that Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has destined for a person, and indeed the person has to go to the marketplace, he has to make a little bit of movement in his life, and he has to look at those sources which are halal, and Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala will then provide for him that which has been fixed for him. But he says that when I looked around, I found that people are unconcerned where it is coming from, whether it is coming from a halal source or a haram source. As long as the person gets this sustenance of his, and as a result they are incurring the wrath of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, the barakat and the blessings of their earnings are lost. Endless feuds, family problems, quarrels, arguments take place in the life of that person. And when that person dies and leaves behind plentiful of haram wealth for his children, then immediately after his death, you must just see what happens in the families. So this is what he says, I notice that people are so concerned, and yet Allah Ta'ala has mentioned in the Quran Sharif, وَمَا مِن دَابَّةٍ فِي الْأَرْضِ إِلَّا عَلَى اللَّهِ رِزْقُهَا. So there is no, meaning that there is no creature on this earth, anything that walks on this earth, any creature that is living, anything that is living, human beings, animals, insects, birds, flies, fish in the sea, animals in the jungle, ants in the ground, snails, scorpions, everything Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has got a certain sustenance that is fixed for them. But especially human beings, Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala has got the sustenance fixed for them, that this person will get so much in his lifetime. After that, Allah Ta'ala, because of his knowledge, his unlimited knowledge, Allah Ta'ala's infinite knowledge, he knows exactly what this person will do to earn that. Now whether the person is going to go towards haram or halal, it is not that Allah Ta'ala pushed him towards haram. Allah Ta'ala had the whole bazaars and the marketplaces open for him. And he had so many ways that this person could have earned halal. But if he is going to go towards haram, then that is what we term as taqdeer, that Allah Ta'ala has recorded it beforehand. It's not that Allah Ta'ala forced him to go for the haram. It is a recording of the knowledge of Allah Ta'ala. So this is not happening because he is forced. He is doing it out of his own will, and he is going to be punished or rewarded because of the usage that he has made of this willpower. This is where lots of people misunderstand taqdeer. A person can take a knife and he can stab someone, and with that same knife he can cut onions and potatoes. A person can take a gun and he can use it for the defense of his own life, or he can take the same gun and pull the trigger on someone who is innocent. So the person has got a choice, he's got a willpower. So this recording that this person, to earn his sustenance, he will go to haram sources, that does not mean that Allah Ta'ala destined it for him, so therefore he will get his sustenance through haram sources. If we can only understand that, then our life will become very comfortable, easy and pleasant. And not only that, but this same iman and amal salih, when we are going to adopt, because we must remember that there are two types of rizq. One is rizq which is mazmoon, meaning that rizq or that sustenance which is written long before the person is even coming into this world, that this person will get so much of sustenance from these sources. Now that is mazmoon. Then there is another rizq which is termed as rizq maw'ud, that when the person will adopt iman and amal salih in his life, when he will have taqwa in his life, when he will have piety in his life, then there is the promise of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, وَمَنْ يَتَّقِ اللَّهِ يَجْعَلْ لَهُ مَخْرَجًا وَيَرْزُقْهُ مِنْ حَيْثُ لَا يَحْتَسِبُ. Allah Ta'ala will provide for him from sources unexpected. Those places that he never expected he will be provided from, Allah Ta'ala will provide for him. And this is not fairy tale, it has happened in the lives of so many pious people of the past, and it is happening at present in the lives of so many who are pious and who have got taqwa in their lives. But just to give you one incident which just suddenly comes to mind, is the incident of Hazrat Ibrahim ibn Adham rahmatullah alayh. He was at one time a king, and he gave up his kingdom, and then he adopted a different lifestyle. He became a durvesh, he became a wali of Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala, but it does not mean that you cannot rule, or you cannot be in the government, or you cannot be a ruler of a country or a governor if you are a pious person. In fact, what we require in those departments are those who are pious, righteous, God-fearing, so that we will not have corruption of the level that we have today. But where do we get them from? But he left it because he suddenly got that taste and that enjoyment in that connection with Allah Ta'ala, and it's a long story. Nevertheless, he was going for Hajj. So when he was going for Hajj, his khas khadim and who was with him was Hazrat Huzaifa Marashi Rahmatullah Ali. So traveling, when they arrived at Kufa, now they were very hungry, nothing to eat, nothing to drink. Those days, that is the reason why there was so much of spirit in that Hajj when the person performed the Hajj and returned. Because they went through so much of difficulties on the way. They were sometimes faced with starvation. Sometimes they had a transport problem, the animal died on the way. Sometimes they had no water on the way. Sometimes they were stricken with some sickness and some illness. And they are going through all those difficulties and trials, but they want to go to the Holy Kaaba and make tawaf. And they want to get that connection with Allah Ta'ala at Mina, Muzdalifah and Arafat. So with all the difficulties and trials, when they go on and they arrive there, then there was an appreciation of that Hajj. Unlike us today, that we just buy a ticket and immediately 2 hours later you can board a flight and you can be there. And then after that we come back with the same habits that we went. Remember, brothers, it's just by the way, but I just wish to mention that we must not take Hajj and Umrah as something very, very easy and common, and something that it has become just like a status symbol now, that a person has made so much Hajj and so much Umrahs. When the person goes to Makkah Sharif, besides all the other things, when he touches the Hajr Aswad, or even when he just faces his palm towards the Hajr Aswad, when he makes istilam of the Hajr Aswad, then that is the touchstone. Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala after that reveals what is in that person's heart. If that person was a sincere haji, if he made plenty of tawbah and istighfar from his past sins, and he committed himself that, oh Allah, I committed a lot of sins in my life, but when I return, I will make sure that I fulfill the rights of whomever it is due, and I will not return to those sins again, then his weakness, his shortcomings and his faults will be concealed. But if this person has just taken it casual as a big joke, he's just going there making istilam of the Hajr Aswad, then within a short space of time, you will notice that that person, if he was a gambler, many people who did not even know he was a gambler, they will come to know he's a gambler. If that person was a womanizer, lots of people who did not know he's a womanizer, that he was having illicit relationship with others, extramarital relationships, lots of people didn't know. But within 2 months, 3 months, 6 months, you will find that that person becomes well known as a person who is involved in some illicit relationship. In the same way, you will notice that that person was taking interest and he thought that nobody knew, just those few clients of mine know. But if he did not make sincere tawbah there, then that Hajre Aswad will expose the person. So how careful we should be, how cautious we should be. But that is a different subject. If I'm going to start that, we will not end. Let us go on to Hazrat Ibrahim ibn Adham rahmatullah alayh. So they travel, and they came up to Kufa. Now they were hungry, thirsty. So Hazrat Huzaifa, who was accompanying him, Hazrat Ibrahim ibn Adham saw that now he is very, very tired and very weak because of no food. And these Ahlullah, sometime in the zikr, Allah Ta'ala gives them so much of energy and strength that they can carry on for days and days. But now this khadim of his, now you could see that he's sick and he's getting weak and he does not have, because of lack of food and drink. So he said, Huzaifa, I can see that you are thirsty and hungry. He said, yes, indeed I am. He said, all right, bring a piece of paper. So he took a piece of paper and there he wrote, O Allah, the only one that we should turn towards is you. And in all our matters, the only one that we should be referring to is you. Therefore, I am referring this to you. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. And he said, therefore, we are turning towards you. And then he mentioned three things there. Ana hamidun, ana zakirun, ana shakirun. Ana hamidun, ana zakirun, ana shakirun. He says, I am a hamid, I am a zakir, and I am a shakir. These are the three things that I am doing. I am praising you, glorifying you, I am making your ibadat, I am making tilawat, I am making my namaz, I am staying away from sins, I am staying away from all the prohibited things. That is what I was supposed to do, so I am making your hamd. I am making your zikr, and I am also making shukr. So these are the three things that I am doing. It was my duty as a Muslim, as a believer, as one who has trust and faith in you to do these three things. Now it covers a lot of things. It covers the whole of Islam and the whole of deen. Ana hamidun, ana zakirun, ana shakirun. He says that is my duty and I am fulfilling that to the best of my ability. But he says at the same time, I have got three problems. I have got three problems. And what are my three problems? He said, my three problems are this, that I have got no food, I am hungry, I have got no water, I am thirsty, and I am a musafir, I am a traveler, and I am facing this type of a problem and difficulty. He said, this is what I have got. These are my three problems, and oh Allah, these are the three things that I am doing. Ana ja'i'un, ana na'i'un, ana ari'u. He said, these are the three problems that I have. I've got no food, no water, and our clothes are also tattered and torn now because we are on a long journey. So he said, hiya sittatun wa ana zameenu li nisfiha. He said, these are six things. There are the six things that I have mentioned. Zakir, Shakir, Hamid. And the other three, that I've got no food, thirsty, so thirst, hunger, and poverty. He said, these are the three problems that we have. The first half of it, he says, the first half of the six, that was my duty which I have fulfilled. O Allah, the other half, the three things that we are now suffering, then that is what we are seeking from you. That provide us with food, provide us with clothes, and provide us with drink. And then it goes on, but I will just give you the gist of it. He says, that madhi li ghayrika lahavo narin khuttuha. That for me to praise anybody else, it is as if there is a huge fire into which I am taking a dive. A fire which I have lit up and taking a dive into, that is what it is for me to praise others. In other words, for my food and for my sustenance, now if I am going to praise some rich person, or some king or some ruler, and tell him that you are this and you are that, tumaise ho, vaise ho, double paise ho, if I am going to say all that to him, just so that he may give me some green notes and red notes, or so that he may give me a big check, or so that he may solve my problems. He said, that is for me like lighting a fire and throwing myself into it. That is the taqwa that is in the hearts of those who have got istighna. Those who have got istighna in their hearts, that they've got a contact with Allah Ta'ala, then they do not extend their hands and beg of people. Their begging is of Allah Ta'ala Himself. So he says, for me to praise anybody just for the sake of getting something in return, which is the common thing that people are doing all over the world today. Why do they praise cabinet ministers? Why do they go and praise those people who are in different departments? Why do they go and praise them? They go and praise them because they expect something in return. They too know that these people are corrupt. They too know that they've got so much of weakness and shortcoming. They too know that these people have got so much of evil in their lives. And they haven't even got Islam and Iman at times. But they go and sing praises of them so that they may get some contract in return. So that they may get something in return. So he says, for me to go and praise anybody else besides you, O my Allah, it is as if diving into the fire. So he says, therefore, O Allah, fulfill my need. He took that letter and he says, O Huzaifa, take this letter and go and give it to the first person that you find. Now this is not a fairy tale. It is recorded authentically. And Hazrat Huzaifa lived for so many years after that. And his Hazrat Ibrahim Adham lived for so many years. And this incident became so well known that he gave this letter. And the first person that he found was somebody that was going past on a camel or on a mule. And he gave that letter to him. When he gave that letter to him, the person read the letter and tears began to flow from his eyes. And then he asked him that, who is the one that gave you this letter? He says, this letter was given to me by my sheikh who is sitting in a certain masjid in Kufa. He said, all right, take this bag. And in that bag was 600 dinars, 600 gold coins. He just took it and gave it to him. Now, Hazrat Ibrahim ibn Adham does not even know who was that person. He gave him this, that he was going to give this, but in any case, he gave him this bag. Now, when he took that bag, he got very surprised that 600 dinars, this person did not even ask many questions. Then he moved on. On the way, he meets a person and he asked him that, do you know that person who gave this 600 dinars in this bag? He says, yes, he's a Christian person. Now that confused him even more, and more shocked he was. So he arrived there and he gave it to Hazrat Ibrahim al-Adham and he said that this is what happened, I gave it to him. And then afterwards I met another man and he said that this was a Christian person. He said, don't worry, just leave it here. Just now he will come here. After a little while that person came there. And he put his hands into the hands of Hazrat Ibrahim al-Adham rahmatullahi alayhi. He read the kalima and he said that this is a gift from my side to you. This is how Allah tabaraka wa ta'ala provides for those who have got taqwa, for those who have got iman and amal salih. Of course, again I repeat, that does not mean that everybody has to just read tasbih and sit down in the masjid and you will get everything. The bazaars and marketplaces are open and we must go there and earn halal living. Kasbul halal farizatun ba'dal fariza. It is a farz after the other farz to earn halal. But in the chase for halal, in the chase for sustenance, don't indulge in haram. Don't go to banks, don't go to those people who are loaning money on interest, and don't steal, don't commit fraud, don't indulge in those things that are haram and prohibited, and then see how much of barakat Allah Ta'ala gives, even in that little earning that the person will have. May Allah Ta'ala give me, give you, and the entire ummah the tawfiq to make amal, wa akhiru da'wana, alhamdulillah, rabbil alamin.